Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. We need to remind you of the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And if you're out there across America listening to us, we invite your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But we ask that you hold your calls for a few minutes because we have with us on the line certainly a gentleman we've had on many times before. I've always considered him one of my favorite guests, a Reverend Tom Horn. Tom, thank you so much for being with us this evening.
Well, thank you for inviting me back on your program.
Well, we've had you a couple of times before. You've written a book. I remember one of them was called The Gods That Walk Among Us. And what was the other one that you wrote?
Spiritual Warfare, The Invisible Invasion.
And, of course, we carry both of those through our ministry just because we think that they're really very, very important for people and Christians to understand that there is another dimension. And although it sounds pretty much like X-Files or some of the other bizarre things we may see on television, the truth is there's a reality to that that most people are unaware of. Isn't that true?
That's true.
Well, why don't you, we were going to talk a little bit at the beginning of the evening, or maybe probably the whole hour, about a new motion picture that's come out from Cloud 10. It's called Deceived. Would you want to just sort of tell our listeners about the movie and why this movie is important?
Well, sure. First of all, let me say, Dr. Monteith, what a pleasure it is to get to be back on your program again. You said a moment ago that you had always considered me one of your favorite, and I got to tell you, the feeling's mutual. You know, I've shared that with you privately. As you also know, I've not been accepting any invitations to speak or interviews or anything else for almost 2 years now, partly because of my involvement with overseeing a project here in the state of Oregon to rebuild a couple of Christian youth camps, and quite frankly, I've been so swamped by the enormity of these projects that I really haven't taken time to do one of the other things which I enjoy doing, and that's what we're doing this evening. But when I was approached by Cloud 10 Pictures to review their new movie, Deceived, which is coming out on video and DVD here in a couple of weeks, and to be a spokesman for the movie, At first I said no, and then I read through the storyline that they faxed me. And I was immediately drawn to the fact that this movie deals with a subject matter which you know that I've been particularly involved with over the past few years. And by the way, Dr. Monteith, I'm not exactly sure why God has opened the door for me to speak to this issue of alien contact in so many different formats and ways. And I was a pastor for 20-some years, and this stuff I thought belonged to the lunatic fringe, you know. And yet, in my last book, The Gods Who Walk Among Us, I just barely touched on it, and yet it seemed to be that one thing in the book that so many people wanted to talk about. I was on many, many different Christian stations, but I was also on some secular stations, including Art Bell's Coast to Coast and some very well-listened-to programs. We have mostly secular audiences, and the Lord gave me the opportunity to speak for hours on some of those programs on this subject. Of course, I've also covered the subject repeatedly on RaidersNewsUpdate.com, which I think that more than anything has probably put me out there as the one of the go-to people for this subject. And then I've been, on the last 2 years, I've also been working on a manuscript. This is a fictional story that will be published later this year by VMI Publishing. But it goes along kind of the same lines as this movie, Deceived. And by the way, I never plug anybody, but if there's any persons out there that have written books that are looking for a Christian publisher, I would highly recommend VMIPublishers.com. They might want to go there and read that. But anyway, it just seems to me that no matter what I do, for some reason, I'm destined to talk about this subject of alien life and UFOs and what that phenomenon means to the Christian community. As a matter of fact, I said I hadn't been accepting any interviews, and then just this last week, New Man Magazine called me and interviewed me for a feature story that they're doing in their May edition. And so, but I believe, Dr. Monteith, that the Christian community does need to know about and contemplate some of the issues that are presented by such media as this Cloud 10 Pictures. By the way, this movie is a fictional story, kind of a supernatural thriller. Probably, have you had a chance to watch it?
Yes, I have, and I'll have to admit it's a gripping 100-some-odd minutes. But of course, even though it's fictionalized, it's really put sort of in the context of the very, very popular movie Contact. In other words, you have this group of listening stations trying to contact a sound or radio transmission from outer space. And, you know, of course, then I think that we can tell at least the listeners that there is a contact. And that, of course, is how it all starts out. They've actually made contact. And isn't that exciting? What's this going to mean for the world? And now we've been able to contact this supernatural force. But of course, they don't realize, at least initially, what the supernatural force is that they've contacted.
Right. That's actually the whole opening premise of this new Cloud 10 movie, Deceived, revolves around this observatory's detection of what they believe to be an alien signal from outer space. This, by the way, this observatory's program is modeled after SETI, the Real Life Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence program, which is, according to their own mission statement, has been designed to explore, understand, and explain the origin, nature, and prevalence and distribution of life in the universe. I think because SETI has, if you remember in the beginning of the movie, they throw some words up on the screen about SETI. And I think they had chose them because they've kind of distinguished themselves among the scientific community as a legitimate research institute.
Why don't you tell me a little bit about SETI? Because I've never actually heard of them. Are they government funded? Who actually puts up the money? Because it takes a lot of money to have the equipment and, you know, all the technology and staff of these listening stations, where they really are spending a great deal of money trying to find out if there is intelligence out in space there someplace.
Yeah, well, SETI is a private institute. It's a nonprofit organization that is dedicated to scientific research and education and public outreach. They accept volunteer donations, things like that. They were founded not quite 20 years ago, 1984. They employ over 100 scientists. Their programs have been sponsored by NASA Ames Research Center, by the National Science Foundation, by the Department of Energy, by the U.S. Geological Survey, by the Jet Propulsion Laboratory.
Sounds like most of these are government organizations, and it's our money that's really funding this sort of thing.
Well, to a great extent, that's exactly right. And But, you know, getting back to this movie, if I may, the thing about the beginning of the movie that I thought was interesting, that this storyline kind of really takes off following this signal that is received from what the recipients believe is an alien source outside of our atmosphere, that kind of reminded me of what in real life is now known as the WOW signal. In August of 1977, radio astronomers detected what was believed to have been a possible signal from an intelligent life in outer space. They literally received a signal that is today known as the WOW signal, and still, by the way, believed to be one of the best candidates for a signal from an alien intelligence that came in from the center of space. It was detected when a burst of radio waves suddenly were picked up by the Ohio State University's Big Ear radio telescope, which has since been closed down, and that program isn't operating anymore. But At the time, the astronomer who was on site and recorded the event was a respected man by the name of Jerry Eamon. And this this Mr. Eamon was so surprised by what he saw coming in on his computers that he scribbled "Wow" on the side of the computer printout. Now, this was an event that had all of the properties that are in the beginning of this movie, the kind of things that astronomers would look for in a signal from an alien intelligence. It was confined to a narrow band of frequencies. It was very close to what they call the hydrogen line, a natural signpost in the spectrum. More importantly, it lasted for literally 72 seconds. So it wasn't just a sudden blip or an anomalous reading. It was the kind of solid recording of what looked like an intelligent signal that programs like SETI and this movie Deceived, the fictional observatory, the kind of things that they just dream about. Unfortunately for them, astronomers looking into that same area of space have never been able again to repeat the WOW signal. But ufologists like to point out that that's really only just one kind of alien contact anyway, and that there are a variety of ways that scientists believe that ET could and may already have been in contact. By the way, Dr. Monteith, a radio signal would be considered a close encounter of the second kind. There are five major types, and these are the categories they actually use. There is a close encounter of the first kind, would be where a UFO is in close proximity, typically within 500 feet of a witness. Close encounters of the second kind would be television, radio reception, or where empirical evidence is left behind, burns or paralysis of people, or perhaps even these circles that appear in wheat fields, things like that. Close encounters of the third kind would be where a UFO has a visible occupant, where an alien itself, if you will, is seen in or near the UFO. Close encounters of the fourth kind are abduction cases. And then close encounters of the fifth kind are where communication supposedly occurs between a person and the alien.
Now, that's fascinating. I've never heard that before. And, of course, as far as I'm concerned, I don't know your opinion, but I think that these UFO encounters, I believe that they're real, but I don't believe they're from outer space. I think they're demonic manifestations. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, first of all, I'm going to agree with you, but I want to say a couple of things about it, if you don't mind.
That's what talk radio is all about. You go right ahead.
Well, you know, not long, like I said, when I was a pastor, I thought this just belonged to the nutcases. But over the years, you know, I've come to realize that accumulating evidence and reputable eyewitness accounts are making most everybody, I think, come to understand that some kind of unexplained phenomenon that's called the UFO experience is occurring. UFO reports right now, as of today, are coming in at the alarming worldwide rate of about 6 sightings per hour. I read a news story just this week where the military is saying they no longer even respond to UFOs that appear. There's so many of them, and they happen so often that they just don't even pay any attention to them anymore unless they consider them to be a military threat or risk. Some of those sightings are being made by military and commercial air pilots. Some of them are being made by astronauts. Some of them have been made by American presidents. President Carter talked about having watched a UFO for over 10 minutes. President Harry Truman said that flying saucers exist, and, quote, they are not constructed by any power on Earth. Astronaut Gordon Cooper has spoke very openly of the UFOs that have been witnessed repeatedly outside of the Earth's atmosphere by him and other astronauts, and he even testified to the existence of unknown extraterrestrial vehicles in an address to the United Nations in 1985. General Nathan Twining, the former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, said this, and I quote, he said, "This flying saucer situation is not at all imaginary or seeing too much in some natural phenomena. Something is really flying around. The phenomenon is something real and not visionary or fictitious." And of course, he was the former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Ronald Reagan talked about this. Stephen Hawkins has talked about this. According to Timothy Good, in his highly praised book above Top Secret, General Douglas MacArthur believed and gave a speech to a cadet gathering that the nations of the world would someday have to make a common front against attack by people from planets, from other planets. So, and that list goes on and on, but what it proves is the idea of UFOs and their pilots is not an idea relegated to the nutcase French. Academics, as well as politicians, as well as military leaders, as well as government personnel, as well as theologians, now believe that, in fact, there is something to this UFO phenomenon.
Well, I'll never forget, of course, my friend Chuck Missler wrote a fascinating book on alien abduction. A lot of people sort of scoffed at that, but I, after having read it and realizing that there's a professor back at Boston, I believe, at Harvard University, who's actually cataloged, hundreds and hundreds of these. Now, this isn't to say that they're from outer space. I think that there is a demonic and spiritual world, and that there is, on occasion, contact between that spiritual world and us. Of course, you want to be awfully careful dealing with this, because your very, very soul is at risk. Your eternal soul is at risk. And this is not something to be taken lightly, but it's something we have to realize, that the Bible is true, there are people who really are demonically possessed, and that there are these invisible forces out there, and you can tap into them, which, of course, is one of the most dramatic parts of this movie, because although it certainly is fictional, we know that our government, certain branches of government, the Central Intelligence Agency, have been exploring the supernatural and, of course, these ideas of transmission, mental telepathy, and actually how you can actually mobilize these forces for military purposes. Have you ever gotten into any of that?
I have, and I hope that later tonight we can talk about that. I wanted to answer your first question, though, when you asked me what I thought these UFOs actually are. Of course, you and I, we've talked about this before. When we talked about my book, The Gods Who Walk Among Us, we got on this subject. I think one night we spent the entire night talking about it.
Well, you don't remember now, we're talking to an entirely different audience, so you can pretend that you never talked to me before and don't be afraid of repeating yourself, because some of these ideas are so far out, and yet, of course, they need to be addressed. They need to be addressed by intelligent people, and they need to be addressed by people who understand the spiritual implications of what we're talking about as far as eternity and as far as our Lord is concerned, and as far as that eternal battle between good and evil that has been here since the beginning of time.
Well, even though you mentioned intelligent people, and that might disqualify me, I do have an opinion about it. And, we talked about this before. And I'll say this one point is the same thing I've said before, that I believe that really the situation is occurring. UFOs are appearing, but it is a multifaceted question. In other words, if they really are appearing, if in fact they are, then what are they? And where are they coming from? And what do they want? Are they highly intelligent beings traveling from distant planets using advanced technology that we can't comprehend, or that's so far beyond us that it's beyond our understanding? Or are they multi-dimensional creatures that live all around us? That's kind of more where Eastman's book went, that they're perhaps moving from one dimension into another. Maybe these are fifth-dimensional or sixth-dimensional creatures. Scientists tell us today there are probably as many as 10 dimensions that exist, and we only perceive 3 of them. The M-brain theory is gathering steam with the scientific community, where there are many M-brains, or there are many dimensions existing side by side, and perhaps some of the beings that exist within these realities might have capacity to move from one into the other. But when you put it down on a very simplistic level, for me to answer the question, what do I believe that they are? I think that they are several things. First of all, I think that sometimes it's just simple astronomical phenomena. In other words, I think sometimes, like in Project Blue Book, where they wanted to say that every time someone saw a UFO, they were seeing Venus on a clear night. Well, I think sometimes they probably are seeing Venus. I also think that there's a meteorological phenomenon. We're just now coming to understand such things as ball lightning and things like that, gases coming up from out of the earth and ignited by static electricity in the air, that kind of phenomenon. We see things we think are ghostly apparitions or UFOs or who knows what, and it could just purely be a natural phenomenon that we haven't yet come to understand. I also think that part of it is U.S. and other governments working on top-secret military hardware. I remember before the stealth bombers were made public knowledge, people were seeing triangular-shaped black UFOs. And then, of course, when the stealth bombers were made public knowledge, some had to admit that that's what they had seen. But beyond all of that, the renowned ufologist Jacques Vallée, who took a lot of grief, really, because he approached this not as a Christian, but he approached the phenomenon as being more metaphysical. He thought that whatever this was, it was the same thing defined in the Bible as angels and demons and so on. And that sometimes that's why they seem to be pleasant, sometimes why they seem to be sinister, and so on. I don't agree with everything that he said, but as a Christian, I would probably be more in line with his line of thinking in that I think that there is an element of activity that is branded UFO activity that does seem to be demonological. It's always been easy for me to believe that demons could at least at times be involved with what we think of as flying saucer activity. We know that evil spirits can manipulate energy and matter. The theological term transmogrification and the German term poltergeist tell us that spirits can do things. They can make lights go off and on. They can make doors bang. They can make plasma appear. That's why in true cases of demonic possession, there's quite often visible phenomenon, multiple voices emanating from the personality, things flying through the room, and so on. Well, if they can do all of that, I suppose that they can make what we think are flying saucers appear in the sky. So then the second question would be that if some of this indeed is demonic manifestation, if a portion of it is demonic, then what purpose would serve the spirit world, if you will, from the stealthy nature of UFO phenomenon? And I think that's where the answer, Dr. Monteith, becomes diabolical. In that UFOism seems to be aimed at doing some sinister things. One, at preparing the earth, possibly, for the coming of the Antichrist, or what some people like Zachariah Sitchin and Eric von Daniken might anticipate as an extraterrestrial return of the gods. But secondly, and more importantly, UFOism seems to be aimed at changing the world's religious belief system. And that occurs, I think, in a variety of ways. One, UFO sightings just simply tend to challenge the claims of biblical history. Secondly, they dispute man's time frame and our unique role in the universe. And thirdly, from a straight-up theological point of view, extraterrestrials are bringing to the earth, I think, a dangerous message, as has been reported in hundreds of abduction cases, of a kind of easy universalism and, quite frankly, New Age mysticism. These New Age celestial saucer pilots tell us that they've been watching over us for literally hundreds of thousands of years, and that they are getting ready to appear now because we have moved into the time when we need to move forward in our next big evolutionary, spiritual, and technological step forward. Well, a lot of people are happy about that, and so in order to prepare us for their coming, these creatures are psychically engaging media moguls and arts and entertainment personalities so that movies and best-selling books and cultural trends and even religious ideas are all focusing the Earth's masses on help from above, moving us in that direction. And the proponents here on Earth are saying, hey, this is cool. Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. They've been here before. Ancient men simply described these flying saucers in terms of demons and angels and the sons of God and Anunnaki because they didn't understand what they were seeing. In other words, many people today believe that ancient space vehicles, manipulating the laws of physics by suddenly appearing and disappearing and operating anti-gravitationally, or hyperdimensional beings moving from one dimension to the other, were assigned God or angel or demon status by sincere but ignorant ancient Bible prophets, and that these same living creatures of Ezekiel are going to return pretty soon in their wheels in the middle of a wheel. providing explanations for our origins and solutions to our problems. Now, Dr. Monteith, let's assume just for a moment that some of these ancient astronaut theorists are correct, that the beings which inhabit modern UFOs are the same as the Anunnaki of the Old Testament, that the modern UFO knots are the same kind of creatures that appeared in the Old Testament and physically intercoursed with human females and or conducted genetic experiments using the antediluvian cell matter, and that resisted the will of God and attempted to deceive and destroy the chosen people. If that's correct, then would we also assume that these modern UFO knots are also attempting to intermingle their species with the human race?
Now you're talking about the creation of the Nephilim?
Yeah, like the according to those who subscribe to the ancient astronaut theory, Zachariah Sitchin in his Earth Chronicle series, where he interpreted the ancient Sumerian cuneiform tablets very literally, saying that many hundreds of thousands of years ago, these UFO knots visited the Earth, they tinkered with hominid DNA, and they created what we think of today as humans. But in the meantime, they also intercoursed with human females, and they created these Nephilim, these half-bred creatures of the Old Testament that were ultimately destroyed by God.
Now, you know, really what's so interesting about that conjecture, if you read Chuck Missler's book, and this is really based upon many, many records of people who had actually had these experiences with alien abductions, that there was always a sexual connotation to that. In other words, either harvesting sperm or female eggs. And, you know, and you ask yourself, what in heaven's name is this all? I mean, are these people who tell these stories are just as crazy as loons? And then, of course, you begin thinking along the lines that you're thinking of the story of the commingling of the Nephilim, these so-called giants, these superior individuals being created genetically by crossing humanity with the demonic. And you know, it's really not so far out. Are they here? Do such things actually happen? Well, we're told in the Old Testament it did, and I, as a Christian, and I know you as a Christian, accept that as this is what happened. And we're told, you know, how somebody asked Jesus, how will you know when it's you're going to come again, when the time. And his comment was, it will be as it was in the days of Noah.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, there are various places in the Bible that seem to indicate that the end time one world order will include a repeat, if you will, of the Nephilim activity of Genesis 6. Like you said, Jesus said, as it was in the days of Noah. But just before I came on your radio program this evening, I was reading again that famous prophecy of Daniel chapter 2 involving King Nebuchadnezzar's great image of gold and silver and brass and iron, and then iron mingled with clay, which many Christians believe refers to the last world government. Well, look at the interesting thing that the prophet Daniel says in Daniel 2:43. He says this, he says, "And whereas thou sawest iron mixed with miry clay, they shall mingle themselves with the seed of men, but they shall not cleave one to another, even as iron is not mixed with clay," end quote. I mean, that statement, they shall mingle themselves with the seed of men, but they shall not cleave one to another, even as iron is not mixed with clay. We have to ask ourselves, who are those who are going to mingle themselves with the seed of men? Is your buddy Missler and Eastman ask in their Alien Encounters book, who are these non-seed?
Well, we're going to have to interrupt you there. We're going to have to take a three-minute break, so if you'd like to get a cup of coffee or a drink of water, and I think my producer has some things he wants to ask you, so you just hang in there, and of course, when we get back, we'll open up our lines at 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY.
There'll be blue
is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and of course this is the time when I have to remind our listeners that our programs are listener-supported, and of course we look to you listening to us out across America, on the internet, up in the state of Washington and Oregon and Idaho, to help us do what we do 5 hours a day. And of course, our underlying theme of all of our broadcasts is basically that we are involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political, ideological, and cultural battlefield. And of course, if we don't understand that, why, it's pretty difficult to understand much of what's going on today. But when we begin talking about such things as we're talking about tonight, it becomes very, very obvious that there really is another world out there. And of course, studying as I do so much of the writings of the people on the other side, they openly brag about their political control today, about the secret hierarchy that rules the world. And of course, many of the things we'll be discussing in this next couple of hours. So we really truly are, when we talk about politics and we talk about Republicans and Democrats, then we ignore the spiritual forces behind the scenes. Why, of course, we're like just spinning our wheels in the mud or the mire. And so, basically, there are not too many programs such as ours that go into the historical and spiritual and political and philosophic and base of what's going on today. And if you think our message is important, we hope many of you will decide right now you're going to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And you can give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And you can join the Radio Liberty family. Or you can, of course, just simply subscribe to our newspaper, our newsletter. And, of course, when you join the Radio Liberty family, you get the newsletter and the 4 best tapes of the month. Some people simply just take the newsletter. Whatever you can do, we will appreciate, because that's how we're able to be on the air 5 hours every day, 2 hours on shortwave, 3 hours on satellite, 5 hours on the internet, and of course reaching people all across America, basically all across the world, with a message, a different message, but putting things and historical events into the basically into their proper spiritual perspective. So right now we're going to get back to Mr. Tom Horn. We'll invite your calls at 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY, and we'll be back in just a moment.
There'll be love and laughter and peace ever after.
Well, Dr. Stan back here, and our guest this evening is Tom Horn. And Tom Horn, of course, has written a couple of books which we carry here, going into this very real spiritual battle. And of course, we're basically talking about a new video. It's available now, and it's you can get this. In fact, we even carry it here. It's called Deceived. It's either available on a video or on CD. And if you'd like to find out about how to get it, you can give us a call of 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. It's fascinating. It's very well done. It's very professionally. It's got Lou Gossett Jr. there and some fairly well-known actors. A riveting movie. It's maybe an hour, about an hour and 10 minutes, something like that. But, of course, behind the fictional story is the gospel message. And, of course, in the very end of the program, why, of course, you will have a gospel presentation. And that's really the strength of this movie, because it tells you an entertainment story. It tells you about something that's really very real, and the fact that our government is delving into the supernatural. And there are divisions within our military that have tapped into these truly demonic forces. And, of course, whenever you begin to tap into these forces and use them for your own, it's not that you control them. Eventually, they control you. And you'll see that so dramatically shown in this motion picture. I think it's got a tremendous message. Don't you, Tom?
I do, absolutely. I actually watched it by myself. And, you know, Christian films don't have a great history of being well produced. And I don't mean that in any indifference to films that have been made in the past. But I think that in the recent period that we're living in now, things have changed, and their ability to produce films, and like you say, in this film, they have Louis Gossett Jr. and Judd Nelson and several other persons who have starred in Academy Award-winning films, for that matter, have brought their talent forward. And then, of course, the storyline is the present. I was going to say I watched it by myself, and then I invited a group of select Christians to come over and watch it at my house, which they did. And we concluded that it was a very well-made Christian film, that we liked the storyline. The tempo of it builds as it gets toward the end. The only thing I would say is it's probably not for the very young, and I think even one of the adults who watched it with us might have been a little bit bothered by the realism of the evil supernaturalism, but I think that it's necessary in the film because we're trying to illustrate what you've already said, that you know, you go out looking for these powers, you might find them, and once you do, you might be sorry that you did.
And I'll tell you what, I think Lou Gossett did a phenomenal job. I mean, he was so real. In fact, everybody, I thought, did an excellent job in the motion picture. But it was so realistic. You were so drawn into this, and you suddenly began to realize that you are face to face with evil. And I'm certain, of course, now, to a lot of our listeners out there, they may never have actually experienced that. I know I have, and I know you have. In fact, that is, of course, the underlying theme of the two books you've written and our conversations in the past. Mm-hmm. But I took you a little off the subject because you were talking about these demonic entities, and you were talking about the UFOs, and this idea that we may actually today truly be entering into a time where there really are Nephilim.
Well, and you know, just to remind your listeners, just before we went to the break, of this place in Daniel, chapter 2, verse 43, where it talks about the last world empire, and it says this very interesting statement where it says that they, whoever they are, shall mingle themselves with the seed of men. And you had mentioned either Missler or Eastman as being a good friend of yours.
Chuck Missler.
Yeah, Chuck Missler, and his book, Alien Encounters, I mean, it is probably the best book that has ever been written on this subject, and even some secular writers have said that the arguments are so powerful, so strong, that even though they're not Christians, they have to kind of be in the Christian camp on this subject. But one of the questions that he has in that book is, who are these non-seed? I mean, there's a whole chapter dedicated to that question, and his conclusion is that really it staggers the mind to contemplate the potential significance of Daniel's passage and its implications as it relates to the future of global government. Because what that verse in Daniel might be indicating, when you at least combine it with the prophecy of Jesus and several other portions of Scripture, is that the same phenomenon that occurred in Genesis 6, where non-human species or non-seed mingled with human seed and produced these giants or these Nephilim, that same kind of phenomenon would be occurring in the revived Roman or New World Order. Now, a good friend of mine who is the managing editor of a Christian magazine sent me an email the other day where he said that he disagreed with me because, you know, basically he was saying, wait a minute, Brother Horn, Jesus said the angels can't get married or have babies. And what I pointed out was that what Jesus actually said was that in the resurrection, we would neither marry nor be given in marriage, but that we would be as the angels in heaven. What we have to keep in mind is that Jesus was talking about angels in heaven, angels which have kept their habitation, which have kept their estate. What we're talking about here are fallen angels that, like Peter and Jude described in their epistles, have abandoned their dwelling place in heaven and literally took up an alternative lifestyle. Another thing, if you look at the angels who visited Abraham in the plains of Mamre, they looked like men. They walked and talked like men. They even ate food with Abraham. So as far as scholars know, angels can take human form and they can carry out normal human functions. There are those who believe that the fallen ones also engaged either in sexual activity or in some kind of genetic manipulation that resulted in the half-human beings called Nephilim. There are those who believe, such as Dr. I.D.E. Thomas, that the modern UFO knots are the same beings and that they are right now involved in some kind of conspiracy, perhaps to deceive humanity concerning the rapture, or perhaps they are in the business of producing an army of half-humans, if you will, in preparation of Armageddon. And while that may sound just absolutely out on a limb to say that, if you look in Genesis chapter 6, the Bible says, when men began to increase on the earth and daughters were born to them, the sons of God noted their beauty and took wives from among them. When you compare that scripture with the numerous other ancient texts that tell the same story, including the books of Enoch, Jubilees, Barak, Genesis Apocryphon from the Qumran texts, Philo, Josephus, and several others, an incredible tale emerges whereby we learn that the giants of the Old Testament, such as Goliath, were literally the half-human, half-demon offspring of angels or fallen angels or watchers and human union. Now, the word for giant in the Old Testament is the word Nephilim, and the root meaning is the fallen ones or those who from heaven to earth came. Now, that's significant because when the Septuagint version of the Old Testament was made, Nephilim was translated as Geganus, and the word Geganus is the word which literally means earthborn. As a matter of fact, it's the same word, Dr. Monteith, that was used in mythology to describe the Titans. And what it literally means is that here is a creature that is partly of celestial and partly of terrestrial origin. Now, according to several of these apocryphal books, these Nephilim, these partly of celestial and partly of terrestrial creatures, literally filled the earth with violence and sought, among other things, to corrupt and to destroy the chosen Hebrew people. Some Bible scholars believe that that was ultimately an attempt by Satan to cut off the birth line of the Messiah. I mean, we know that Satan knew about the proto-evangelium, the promise in Genesis 3:16, that a Savior was going to be born, the seed of the woman, and that he would destroy Satan's power. So those who subscribe to this theory, and there are many, they believe that Satan's followers, those who were called Anunnaki and Cha-Cha and Watchers and several other names, that they intermingled with the antediluvian women in a conspiracy to stop the birth of the Messiah. The logic is that they probably thought that if human DNA could be universally corrupted, then there would be no way for a spotless son of God to be born. And of course that would have been true. If the bloodline leading to the time of the Messiah would have included universally demonized DNA, then no Savior could have been born. Well, if that actually happened, mankind would have been lost forever. So what happened? First of all, God commanded Israel not to intermarry with the heathen populations. All Bible scholars believe that that was so there might be a pure bloodline in Israel. But secondly, he commanded Noah to build an ark and to prepare for a flood that would literally destroy every living thing. Now listen, the fact that God, a God who is long-suffering, a God who is so patient, not willing that any should perish, the fact that that God had to send such a universal fiat of judgment like the flood that literally destroyed everything down to babies illustrates how widespread the altered DNA had eventually become. Matter of fact, the Bible says that only Noah, and therefore by extension his children, were found perfect in their generation. And the Hebrew word for perfect in this case is the exact same word that's used in Leviticus to describe an unblemished sacrificial lamb. The meaning is not moral perfection. The meaning is that Noah was physically untainted. In other words, his DNA had not been corrupted or altered by the Anunnaki or the Nephilim, as perhaps, if you agree with this theory, the rest of the world had been. So when you combine that reality or mythos. With the prophecy of Jesus Christ that you mentioned earlier, but as the days of Noah were, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be, Matthew 24:37. You can't help but wonder if there isn't a connection between the end times and what some are today calling a return of the giants, a return of alien creatures who reportedly are coming to help us in our next big evolutionary step forward. Jesus may have included a meaning in that prophecy that the same phenomenon that was occurring during the days of Noah would be occurring in the days leading up to the rapture of the church. Well, if that's true, then, Dr. Monteith, that prophecy is remarkable when one realizes that after God judged the celestial beings who cohabited with the Noetic women, all such comparable activity historically vanished until, according to some people, about the year 1940. Then, following the infamous Roswell incident, which occurred in New Mexico in 1947, people from around the world began once again encountering strange creatures supposedly conducting procreative or genetic experiments on their abductees. Well, if that's actually happening, what does it point to? That really becomes the big question. And it can be answered in a secular way, or it can be answered in a spiritual way. And I, as a Christian, I have to look at it in a spiritual way and say, if this is actually happening, then maybe it makes some of these verses in the scripture, such as the rapture of the church being accompanied by fearful sights and great signs from heaven, make sense. There are those people who believe that Satan is literally contriving an alien invasion, if you will, in order to explain the disappearance of so many people at once in the rapture. Now, if you don't believe in the rapture, and some of your listeners won't, they can also keep in mind that the Bible says some very interesting things about how the one world government, or how the Antichrist, is going to appear in the last days. First of all,
we've got Don. He's been hanging on here for a long time.
Oh, okay.
Spokane. So let's just take Don, and we can get back to that. Hi, Don. Do you have a question or comment?
Yeah. Ephesians 6:12 says, "We wrestle not against flesh and blood, which is the human beings, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of darkness in this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places." I think it goes right along with Daniel 2:43, as your guest has already said, that these people will be mingling themselves with the human race, and we won't be, those who are here at the time will not be struggling against human race, flesh and blood. They'll be struggling against demons.
Okay, I wouldn't disagree with you at all. Anything else, Don?
No, thank you.
Thank you so much. All right, fine. And, of course, there's much in the scriptures that would tend to point in to the validity of your point. The problem is that if you don't believe in the supernatural, so many people, Christians, think this is a lot of foolishness. And yet, of course, so much in the Bible really points to the fact there are supernatural forces out there, and of course you engage them at the risk of your own soul.
Well, that's exactly right, and your caller is exactly right. As Christians, we have to think cerebrally, but we also have to think spiritually. And you have this bizarre combination of things that appeared on the one hand to be some kind of advanced technology. And yet, like Jacques Vallée has pointed out, it may be advanced technology, but it has an unusual flavor that smacks of biblical demonism.
I know that I have a book in my library. I think it's above top secret, but the foreword is written by the former vice count or head of the British Air Force, basically. And he, of course, writes about this, and about UFOs. And he finally concludes the introduction saying, there's one other possibility, and that is that this is metaphysical. He said if this was, something experimental that had to do with, something the United States or England is doing, I would know about it after all. I was in charge of the British Air Force. But he said there is a possibility, and the best possible explanation is metaphysical. Now, I'm sort of paraphrasing what he said, and there may very well be, as you said earlier, some element of government experimentation, but it's certainly not all government experimentation, and there is certainly a supernatural element to the things that are going on today, which we ignore at our own peril.
Well, and I'll just add this, and then I suppose we can move on to whatever you want to talk about, but it brings the question right back again then to this. If, in fact, part of this is supernatural, what are they doing? Why would demons have any interest in this parody, if you will, of presenting themselves as advanced, extraterrestrial, humanoid-like beings who are evolutionarily a zillion years ahead of the rest of us here on planet Earth? Why would they even be selling us on that idea? I think it's interesting that in Thessalonians, when it talks about the coming of the Antichrist, it says his coming will be with all power and signs and lying wonders. Think about the combination of those two words, lying wonders. What are those lying wonders that are going to accompany his appearing? Well, a lot of people believe they might be UFOs. Daniel, again, he says that the Antichrist will not regard the God of his fathers, Yahweh, nor have any desire for women, nor love any god, but he will magnify himself above all. But, he says, in his place, he will honor the god of fortresses, and he will honor a god whom his fathers did not know. In the Hebrew, that literally says an alien god. Now, Belhazor, the aforementioned lord of the fortresses, provides a connection between Baal and the god that the Antichrist, the only god that the Antichrist will be willing to let stand in his place. Well, that's very interesting, because Baal was originally the lord of war and of the sky. As Baal-Bamoth, he was the lord of the high places. As Beelzebub, he was the lord of those who fly, or that quickly flit from place to place. Daniel literally seems to be saying that the Antichrist is going to honor a god who is the lord of those who quickly fly in the high places, the prince of the powers of the air, the New Testament says, the prince of wicked spirits in high places, or literally in the heavens or in the aerial regions. Well, obviously, that could refer to what we're talking about tonight, UFO activity, and complement this storyline of Cloud 10 Pictures' new movie, Deceived.
Right, and of course, the underlying theme of this movie is that what these people have encountered, thinking that they've, of course, got this message from outer space, is something that comes from here on Earth. And, of course, once the people hear the sound, why, they are simply possessed, as it were. And really, it's they present this so well. You know, I mean, you can, and I won't mention how you know that something spiritual, powerful spiritually has happened to them, but they do that so so cleverly. You know, you're watching this thing, and you suddenly realize what's happening, and you can actually watch as these people are taken over.
Yeah, I think that was one of the things in the film that might have been a little bit bothering to at least one of the people who was watching it. Like I said, the realism in the film, while it was necessary, I don't think I would let little kids, small children, sit down and watch this. But I would certainly recommend that, well, you know, your point is that, in fact, it's probably within about the first maybe 20 or 30 minutes into the film. I don't think I'm going to give away a real big secret here. But the point is made that the alien signal might actually be coming from somewhere either on or even inside of the Earth. I thought that was significant because Bible scholars, of course, believe that the physical Earth itself contains spiritual forces. Some of the Bible verses that support that notion include Revelation 9:14, where we read about the four angels that are bound in the great river Euphrates. Job 26:5 says, the Rapha, or fallen angels, are made to writhe from beneath the waters. Various other Bible verses depict the earth as a kind of holding tank, or a prison, if you will, where God has bound certain fallen entities. 2 Peter 2 talks about that. Jude 6 talks about that. But in the movie, what made me think of this is that the Hebrew, in the Bible, the Hebrew people were warned in the Old Testament that these spirits in the earth might seek to communicate with humans read that Deuteronomy chapter 18 talks about that. Then, by way of example, when the witch of Endor did communicate with these fallen spirits, it says they ascended up, quote, from out of the earth, 1 Samuel 28:13. So according to the Bible, Cloud 10 pictures premise is indeed possible. And one has to think that if men reject God and they go looking for some other God, like one of the, you know, that pastor in there, that New Agey kind of, he was a crack up to me. I didn't know whether I could stand listening to him or if I didn't know what to think about him.
But. Well, I mean, he was beautifully portrayed. Now, this is a man who is a pastor, but obviously he is a pastor with a big radio following and makes a lot of money and really doesn't believe in, you know, in the scriptures. He's, you know, sort of an Elmer Gentry type of character, but he is so convincing. You just you come to just intensely dislike him, but then you're supposed to. He plays the part so well,
right? But as you say, I mean, these from wherever the signal is coming from, and the movie gives you some latitude in deciding for yourself where the signal is coming from. But wherever it's coming from, there definitely is a dark, powerful presence there that literally possesses these folks. That's probably one of the most disturbing aspects, Dr. Monteith, of the UFO phenomenon, are these reports that continue to come in from around the world of nighttime abductions by these small, wide-eyed creatures who supposedly are the pilots of these UFOs and are conducting various medical experiments on their victims. Those who subscribe to the ancient astronaut theory tell us that activity would be proof of an ongoing experiment between humans and the aliens, and they note that the radical aspects of those experiments include impregnating victims and later removing those hybrid embryos. But ironically, the portion of scripture that they most commonly reference is Genesis 6:4, which we read earlier, when mankind had spread all over the world, girls were being born. Some of the supernatural beings saw that these girls were beautiful and took the ones they liked. Now, that portion of scripture is the part that is the portion of scripture that some I'm trying to think of a word here and it's escaping me. But anyway, those who subscribe to the ancient astronaut theory use as biblical proof of alien interaction with the human race, and yet it's the same portion of scripture that demonologists point to indicate that some kind of ancient demonic activity was occurring that, of course, would be earth-based.
Well, we're going to have to let you have a couple of minutes of rest, and we're going to have to bid good night to our listeners up there in the great Northwest, and, of course, this is the time when we ask you to pray for America and pray for revival. We ask you to pray for our ministers and for our leaders. And lastly, we ask you to pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. We'll be back again tomorrow evening at the same time. And until then, may the Lord be with you.
There'll be blue.
Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Our Internet listeners may wonder what's happened the last couple of nights. We actually had a little problem. Somebody had done some work on the program from our streamer, and they left one letter out or number out, and suddenly for three nights we weren't on the air. But we're back on now and seem to be doing very well, and so we hope you're enjoying the program. But right now, our special guest this evening is Thomas Horn. And Thomas Horn's a minister. He's working now at a Christian camp in Oregon, fairly constructing that. But he's always had an interest in this, the supernatural. Maybe not always had an interest. Basically, it really started when you had somebody who was demonically possessed come to your church. What was that story about?
Oh, yeah, we talked about that.
Remember, the audience here doesn't know those things, so don't be afraid to be repetitive.
Well, I haven't told that story in a long time, so I'm not sure that I can remember all of the detail. Well, actually, I have to say it's probably fairly emblazoned on my mind. I've been a pastor for probably 6 years by that time, and of course, you know, you get fresh out of Bible school, you think you have the answer to every problem in life anyway, and pastoring in a little community. And God had really blessed our church. I mean, we were growing and everything was happening the way that, you know, you think it ought to happen. And quite honestly, even though I had studied demonology, in my heart, I don't think I believed that there was anything to it. Now, you know, one may question how in the world you could reconcile that with the Bible. But we reconcile all kinds of things with the Bible. And it was not until I began pastoring in a small community where this community was literally a stronghold of demonic activity. And I saw phenomena and things that literally began to change my worldview, my cosmology, began to change what I thought about the present. Begin to change actually my eschatology, where I thought we were and where I thought we were going. And I couldn't explain in terms of psychology what I had seen happening around me, especially in a couple of cases. And it put me on the quest to study this idea of demonology, both from a historical and theological point of view, to try to determine what I really believed and would I really accept what the Bible had to say on the matter. And once I did, of course, I wrote the book Spiritual Warfare, The Invisible Invasion, which, by the way, it's been published 4 years ago and is still in the top 25 books on spiritual warfare, according to Barnes & Noble. I followed that a year later or 2 years later with The Gods Who Walk Among Us. Both of these books, I think, we've talked about on your program in the past.
And both are available from Radio Liberty at 1-800-544-8927. If you're for a suggested donation, you can call Mary and she'll suggest it to you. But we think they're very important books, which is why we kept them in stock.
Yes, and I would certainly recommend that those who have been listening tonight, if they're interested in the subject matter that we've been talking about, to call your radio program and to order either of those two books. Tonight we're talking about the movie Deceived, which is Cloud 10 Pictures' new movie, which is kind of a related subject, and that's the reason why after 2 years off the hangar, as it were, I've agreed to come back on the radio. And if I have got to come on the radio and talk about anything, I want to do it on Stan Monteith's radio.
Well, I appreciate that.
You know, we were talking about this, the element in this movie. Once you've watched the movie for a little while, you begin to realize that there is some kind of ominous, demonic kind of presence that is seeking to interact with these people, and I'm like you. I won't explain how, when watching the film, you are made to realize that that's happening. It's a visual effect, and it's very realistic. But what it made me think about was in this UFO phenomenon, what many have recognized is a demonic presence. I was thinking when I was watching this film about Whitley Strieber, who wrote his best-selling books, Communion, and then Transformation several years later, in which he detailed his own personal fantastic story of abduction. And yeah, I don't know if you've ever read those books. I wouldn't even recommend that anybody read those books. But from a researcher's point of view, having read the books, his description of these creatures and his abduction is, I think, very consistent with biblical possession. I took a couple of quotes, which I'll read to you very fast. In Transformation on page 36, he says, "Increasingly, I felt as if I were entering a struggle that might even be more than life and death. It might be a struggle for my soul, for my essence, or whatever part of me might have reference to the eternal. There are worse things than death, I suspected, and I was beginning to get the distinct impression that one of them had taken an interest in me. So far, the word demon had never been spoken among the scientists and doctors who were working with me." And then he goes on a little bit later, he says, "But alone at night, I worried about the legendary cunning of demons." And then a little past that, he says, "I felt an absolutely indescribable sense of menace. It was hell on earth to be there. And yet, I couldn't move, couldn't cry out, couldn't get away. I lay as still as death, suffering inner agonies. Whatever was there seemed so monstrously ugly, so filthy and dark and sinister. Of course they were demons. They had to be. And they were here, and I couldn't get away," end quote.
Now, was he coming from a Christian point of view?
No, he's absolutely not a Christian. As a matter of fact, he was a film writer. He wrote several books, The Wolf and books like that, that were turned into movies. He was both an established fictional writer, and also some of his books turned into screenplays. He is an agnostic, perhaps, but he certainly doesn't believe in the Bible's point of view. And he believes wholeheartedly in the ancient astronaut theory, that we were created by alien, and we're basically a zoology program, if you will. And yet, from a philosophical point of view, when he wrote the book, he couldn't help but explain his experience in terms that are very consistent with biblical possession. And like I said earlier in your radio program, famous ufologist Jacques Vallée is also, as far as I know, not a Christian, but he has written extensively on the parallels between UFO activity and biblical demonism. In his book, Confrontations, he writes on page 159 this. He said, "I pointed out in Invisible College that the structure of abduction stories was identical to that of occult initiation rituals. Several years before, I had shown in Passport to Magonia that contact with UFO knots was only a modern extension of the age-old tradition of contact with non-human consciousness in the form of angels, demons, elves, and sids. Such contact includes abduction, ordeal, including surgical operations, and sexual intercourse with the aliens. It often leaves marks and scars on the bodies and mind, as do UFO abductions," and so on, end quote. Of course, a lot of other writers, including theologians and secular writers, have noticed that UFO manifestations often are, in the words of John Keel, another secular writer, merely minor variations of the age-old demonological phenomenon, so that the idea that some persons may be experiencing literal demonic possession or some other as yet unknown intercourse with demons is a very real possibility in the UFO and alien abduction phenomenon. That's one of the reasons why, Dr. Monteith, that I believe that in the study of this phenomenon, it needs to be done in a scholarly and clinical fashion. People need to be careful in getting an interest, if you will, in the metaphysical, or getting an interest in ufology. There are people who have started out as Christians and they wind up in paganism, or they wind up possessed, or they wind up lost. So there is a very real, and I think, quite frankly, I think as time moves forward, we're going to find tangible proof that the UFO phenomenon is connected historically to ancient cosmic war between good and evil, between God and Lucifer. I'm going to go out on a limb here, and something make some of your listeners probably think that I am that I'm out on a limb. But I believe, now I don't believe this will happen, I believe this could happen, that the Cydonia face, which is known as the face on Mars, and the pyramidal structures near it, could someday illustrate a past Martian society. Furthermore, I believe that if that happens, that Bible verses, such as the stones of fire mentioned in Ezekiel chapter 28, might be connected to such. Ezekiel's reference to Lucifer moving up and down amidst the stones of fire refers, many scholars believe, to the once glorious angel's dominion over the planetary belt, including perhaps Mars. Well, if that happens, that might suggest to us that remains of a past civilization on Mars, if someday discovered or on some other planet, I think if that happens, it provides physical support, if you will, for the Bible's account of prehistoric cosmic war and the subsequent expulsion of Lucifer and his angels from the heavens. Also keep in mind that such evidence might provide background for the building of the pyramids and similar structures here on Earth whose technical requirements seem to be far in advance of ancient man's comprehension.
Well, let's get to that just a minute. Right now we've got Ed calling in from Aptos, and he's been waiting there patiently. Hi, Ed. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. I heard the mention of Whitley Strieber. I've listened to his show, his Now and Then, and I've heard him personally say that he had CIA buddies. That's what he called them, friends, buddies. He also said that his father, his grandfather, was a close friend of Dr. Edward Mandel House.
Mm-hmm.
Edward Mandel House, and they used to go over to his cellar and have wine, and he was such a nice man. That's all I had to say. Thank you, Dr. Stan.
All right, of course. I think our listeners should know that Edward Mandel House was deeply involved in the occult, and I think that's what Ed was trying to bring out. And this other gentleman may be deeply involved with the occult. In fact, you know, one of the things that Chuck made in his discussion of these alien abductions is most of these people, you know, had actually been involved with paganism or New Age or occultism, and maybe that's why they were much more susceptible to this these alien encounters than the Christian. I don't know of any Christian who's ever had an alien encounter. Do you, Tom?
I honestly don't. And you know, probably among Christians, I've probably been as well researched on this subject matter as many are. Now, I wouldn't put myself at the level of your friend Chuck Missler, but somewhere beneath that, I'm probably among the top researchers in this area, and I don't know. I mean, I know of people who claim to be Christians who have been the objects of abduction cases, but when you actually look at what they have said and what they have written, to me they seem to be more New Age than they are straight-up Christians. I noticed in Deceive's promo packet from Cloud 10 Pictures that they pointed out that a lot of very popular movies like Star Trek and Star Wars are promoting a belief, if you will, in extraterrestrial life and extraterrestrial religion. That seems to be a religious idea that is an amalgamation of portions of Christianity, portions of Buddhism, portions of Taoism, portions of, you know what I'm saying. It seems to almost be kind of a straight up kind of New Age religion, so that you have some people who might say, I am a Buddhist, or you might have some people who say, I am a Christian, or you might have some people who say whatever. But really, when you look at the doctrine which they have espoused, it's not Christianity in the sense that you and I would think of it.
No, I would agree with you totally, and I think that hopefully at least as far as I'm concerned and my family, that we will not be victims of this sort of an attack, because I think it's a spiritual attack. But if you don't have the blood of Christ, why, you certainly are certainly open to that sort of thing, especially if you begin to dabble in the occult, as obviously this gentleman you were discussing has, and of course his association with Colonel House makes it very, very obvious. And I don't know, those of you who have read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, will remember we quoted people who knew House, and these were these books are written back in 1920, and they would talk about how Colonel House would come into a room and begin to talk, and after he left, this idea would ooze into your mind. That was the term that was used by one of the authors. The idea would ooze into your mind, and suddenly you'd think it was a great idea. It was all yours, and you'd go out and you'd begin to promote that. And then sometime as you were cogitating, I love that term, cogitating, you know, you'd suddenly realize that that idea had been planted in your mind by Colonel House. And here was a man who, you know, with no background at all, no position, suddenly controls the President of the United States. He controls the Prime Minister of France. He controls the Prime Minister of Italy, Orlando and Clemenceau. And he brags about how he manipulates these men and makes them believe things that he himself knows are not true. And I read those, it puzzled me for years. You know, how did he do this? Until I suddenly came across the writings of the occultists, who bragged that, of course, House was one of their people. And then, of course, it all makes sense. I hear truly he had supernatural power. And the fact that this, as Ed said, that this this gentleman who's been involved for writing about UFOs, you know, was close to House, his family was close to House, it all began to sort of, the little pieces of the picture begin to fit together so well. But if you don't know what the picture is going to look like, you're not going to recognize it.
Well, the idea behind the ancient astronaut theory that that all of us are the end result of genetic engineering by advanced extraterrestrials impacts our religion and everything else we believe is basically occultic in nature. And Dr. Monteith, it's oozing into the academic society, it's oozing into the minds at NASA, it's oozing into the religious community. It's amazing the number of people that are opening up to this idea. Dr. Daniel Knoll, the professor of liberal studies and religion and culture at Norwich University in Montpelier, Vermont, he wrote an article last year called Why the X-Files is Becoming Our New Religion, in which he pointed out that more and more people are embracing this X-Files, alien, UFO-related kind of belief system. And according to him, it's literally transplanting traditional faith in the United States. Interestingly, shortly after his thesis on this subject was published, Monsignor Corrado Balducci, who is the High Vatican representative for the study of extraterrestrial life, met with Hebrew scholar and ufologist Zachariah Sitchin, which I mentioned earlier, who is the author of the Earth Chronicle books, which are supposedly an interpretation of the ancient Sumerian cuneiform text, which talk about the aliens that came and how they created humans and so on. And this, here's the High Vatican representative. He sits down with Zachariah Sitchin to talk about this issue of extraterrestrials and the creation of man, and how that might impact traditional religious belief, specifically Christian belief, in our world. And what they concluded was so startling, and I want to quote this for you. Here was part of their conclusion. Extraterrestrials can and do exist on other planets. They can be more advanced than we. And materially, man could have been fashioned from a pre-existing sentient being, end quote. Well, of course, Sitchin believes that these advanced extraterrestrials, the Anunnaki, as they were called by the Sumerians, began visiting planet Earth some half a million years ago, and that approximately 300,000 years ago, they began engaging in genetic engineering of Earth hominids, which eventually led to what you and I are today. Now, concerning that idea that the Bible story is really one of man originating following an encounter with alien visitors or God, the Vatican's representative surprisingly did not discount the Sitchin, Anunnaki, Nephilim theory, and as a matter of fact, he even seemed to support it, saying this, and here's another part of their conclusion that I'll quote for you. Quote, I can bring up the view of the great theologian Professor Father Markov, who is still alive and who is greatly respected by the Church, who formulated the hypothesis that when God created man and put the soul into him, perhaps what is meant is not that man was created from mud or lime, but from something pre-existing, even from a sentient being capable of feeling and perception. So the idea of taking a pre-man or hominid and creating someone who is aware of himself is something that Christianity is coming around to, end quote.
That is a scary idea, the thought that anybody in a high position in the Catholic or the Protestant Church would accept that, because, of course, it destroys the very essence of a belief in the Bible that God created heaven and earth. In other words, once you begin to question that basic concept, and, you know, what's really so fascinating to me, Tom, is that, you know, really there are only basically two concepts. Either life, you know, develops spontaneously, or God created it and created everything in an orderly manner. Well, since the scientists who disbelieve in God, you know, really find it very difficult to believe in spontaneous generation of life, then they've come up with this ultimate in absurdities that we came from outer space. In other words, there's life out there, and that's where we came from. But that still doesn't answer the question, assuming they were correct, which they do not believe for one instant they are. But where did that life come from? Somebody had to create that life and that intelligence, and they've got no answer for that. They just want to confuse the issue. Anything to take us away from our belief that God created the heaven and the earth.
You're absolutely right. In fact, you just coined exactly the same question that I have asked. If these aliens came and created us, then where did they come from? Simple question, but it ultimately comes back to an unanswerable dilemma unless you are willing to accept the authority of the Bible.
But, you know, they will go to the most absurd lengths to try to discredit the Bible. I mean, yeah, and what they're doing really is simply confusing the issue. You can't think about the ultimate question, well, then where did the aliens come from? Who created them? They don't want you to ask that question. They just want you to question your own belief.
Well, I got off totally off track a minute ago, going to tell you what I thought about the face on Mars and all of that, but I'll just skip that issue. I want to point out this whole idea. In fact, this article that was written, "Will Star Wars or Will the X-Files Become Our New Religion?" and the whole argument that it is displacing traditional faith in the United States. One of the things that is it's heart-rending is to see year after year how attendance at traditional Christian churches has been in decline. I read not too long ago one of the polls that showed that not necessarily Christianity, by the way, but church attendance has been in decline for about a decade, and yet paganism has grown by 1,600%. And, you know, you wonder, okay, so what is happening? Is it because we're moving into the end times? Is it because there must be a great falling away? Is it because we're just simply living prophetically in a time where this is going to happen, and it just simply is? Or is it a failure of the church, or was it a failure of the church in the first place, and God simply forecast through prophecy what he knew we were going to do? Sitting there thinking about that the other night and clicking the channel, sitting there with my wife, and I won't say what television program we came across, but it's a major syndicated Christian television program, and the pastor stood up, and he quoted the verse, "Say not ye that there are yet 4 months unto harvest, for I say look out unto the fields, they are white already to harvest." Then he took that text, and he turned that text, and he said, "I want you to take this text and apply it to yourself, and I want you to begin to confess that it is time for your harvest, because Jesus says that you're not supposed to say that it's 4 months yet to the harvest. You need to claim that harvest." And then he starts talking about material possessions and inheriting money and wealth and all of that. And I thought, you know, this is the reason why. And I don't mean to be critical, by the way, of people's ministry. But I think that it has to be. We the church is at a time when we need to critically turn the light, if you will, on ourselves and ask ourselves if we are being preachers of the gospel. because, Dr. Monteith, it is my belief that it is the preaching of the gospel and that alone that has the power to turn people to Christ and to change them on the inside, to make them people who will stand up when times get hard. And what we are preaching in our churches today, and I don't want to get off on my, as my pastor says, get off on a little pig trail here, because it's not what we're supposed to be talking about. But it bothers me so much that we see such a growth, such a popularity, if you will, of these pagan thoughts, of this, of people running away with this whole notion of ancient astronaut theory and the different New Age forms of paganism. I read, you know, this summer, the sequel to the Star Wars movie is going to hit the theaters this summer, and I read one of the reviewers of the last film, The Phantom Menace, talking about this upcoming film, and he made the point that there are more young people in today's generation who will hear the message that is preached by the Star Wars movies than the number of young people who will hear sermons being preached in America's pulpits. And the reason that troubled me to some extent, and I'm going to tie this back in now to what we're talking about, is that when the last Star Wars movie came out a couple of years ago called The Phantom Menace, I was so taken by the blatant New Age theft of biblical Christ analogies that I wrote an editorial for RaidersNewsUpdate.com called Star Wars Film Promotes New Age Messiah, in which I pointed out, among other things, that, and let me just explain this for a moment, that the Jedi in these films are nearly exact duplicates of the New Age Ascended Masters theology. The Jedi are in tune with the Force, and of course the Antichrist will worship the God of Forces. The Jedi look forward to a prophesied Redeemer who will bring balance to the Force. This promised one finally appears, and lo and behold, he is born of a virgin. His name is Anakin, which in Hebrew is the sons of Anak, and refers to the supernatural giants that are conceived of Satan or demons, according to many people's interpretation of Bible and extra-biblical histories. Anakin's Jedi master is Qui-Gon Jinn, whose name is made up of Qui-Gon, which is a branch of Taoism that teaches how to interact with and utilize the universal energies that exist within and around us. The second part of his name, Jinn, are the Muslim demons that inhabit the air. Qui-Gon Jinn states that Anakin is the promised one, the Christ of prophecy, who will appear to bring harmony to the universe, and he proclaims his belief in him in a way that similar to what John the Baptist did of Christ. Just like Jesus redeemed us by his blood, midichlorians in Anakin's blood are unlike anything in any human born before. According to the movie, that makes him special. That makes him a redeemer. In the following scene, Anakin stands before the Jedi Council, just like Jesus did before the temple priests, and he hears words very similar to the gospel passage of Matthew, which says, "Are you the one that is to come, or shall we wait for another?" In other words, what I'm saying to you, and anybody who wants to read this parallel can go to RaidersNewsUpdate.com and click on Star Wars Film Promotes New Age Messiah, and they can read all of these different parallels. But let me drop to the bottom of what I want to say about this. Unlike Jesus, who did not turn to the dark side when he was tempted, Anakin Skywalker gives in to the dark side until the end of his life. And I think it is that, Dr. Monteith, that makes for a very dangerous irony in these Star Wars films, which this academic has said is becoming our new religion. Because in these Star Wars films, the Savior ultimately becomes Anakin Skywalker or Darth Vader, which tells us that the one we have always perceived of as being evil will become our savior in the end. And if that isn't a setup for the coming of the Antichrist, I don't know what is.
I agree with you totally. Well, we got 3 minutes here to get a cup of coffee or a drink of water, and we'll be back with Tom Horn, and we'll welcome your calls at 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY.
There'll be love and laughter and peace ever after. Tomorrow, when the world is free.
Well, Dr. Stan, back here at Radio Liberty, and of course this is the time when we have to remind you that our programs are listener-supported, and we're really dependent upon those of you out there in the listening audience who believe in what we're doing to help us so that we can continue being on the radio 5 hours a day, and at one time, hopefully, we can expand even further. But right now, we've got a fairly good coverage across America. Our weekend program is heard on 14 stations, one of the programs. The other is heard on a station in upstate New York, up in the Albany area, that hits 9 counties and in New York State. And believe me, they need to hear the truth up there. And then, of course, throughout the week, 5 hours a day, American Freedom Network, Genesis Network, and Radio Liberty Network are heard on stations all across America on shortwave, internet, and, of course, on the satellite. So we hope that many of you out there will feel what we do is important, and, of course, will be wanting to join our team. And you do that by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And, of course, we'll appreciate your help. We'll appreciate your support. When you join the Radio Liberty family, why, you get our 4 best tapes of the month. You get our monthly newsletter. When, of course, you just subscribe to the newsletter, why, if we get that to you on a monthly basis, we invite you to copy the newsletter, to copy the audio tapes. We ask you to give them to others. I got a letter just the other day from a gentleman who lives up, I guess it's in Oregon, and he said, you know, he's been lending our tapes out to other people, and now they're asking him if they can borrow the tapes. They want to hear them too. And, of course, he's trying to get them to listen to our programs. But you're going to have to help me reach others, reaching others. But we are, little bit by little bit, getting people to think, to question, and begin to understand what's going on in America, not only from a political and historical basis, but from a spiritual point of view. So if you'd like to become part of our team, it's as simple as calling us at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR or writing to us at Post Office Box 13 in Santa Cruz, 95063. That's Post Office Box 13 in Santa Cruz, 95063. Remember our website, www.radioliberty.com. Tell your friends in other areas about it so they can pick up our programs. And, of course, our programs, most of them are archived, so they can get those. And help us spread the message of truth across America from sea to shining sea. Just you wait and see. Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, our guest this evening, Tom Horn, and we're basically talking about the Cloud 10 movie called Deceived. If you'd like to know more about it, you can give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Now, this should be available very, very soon at Christian bookstores and hopefully at bookstores all across the country, and you'll see it there. It's simply Deceived. And it's got Luke Gossett Jr. And who's a couple of the other authors in the who are a couple of the other actors in the movie there, Tom?
Well, the feature actors really are Louis Gossett Jr., Judd Nelson, who of course was in the Breakfast Club and St. Elmo's Fire, and then Jefferson Maupin from Unforgiven. But there's some other actors in there, including yours and my favorite. Preacher, whose name I don't know, but that did a very good job in the film.
Yeah, I think everybody did a good job, and it's so professionally done. One of the things that really intrigued me was the part that's played by a young woman who is supposedly working with Lou Gossett, who is a colonel, in a military colonel, who is, of course, working with the supernatural. And, of course, she is tapped into a truly supernatural force. And she plays her part really very, very convincingly, because she actually now can access this force and get it to obey her. But of course, she also realizes that she has put herself in contact with something that she can't necessarily control, and it's both exciting and then it's frightening. Did you get that impression? I thought she presented that so well, because with a sudden realization that you've tapped into something, and but then you think you control it, but suddenly you realize it controls you.
Yeah, that was actually the other part of the movie, I think, is that not only is there an alien contact, but simultaneously there is this top-secret Pentagon experiment in which they are studying telekinesis, and could that become an entirely new type of warfare or an entirely new type of weapon that could be used on the battlefield? And as they are studying that phenomenon, this alien signal is received, and when it is, it changes this young woman who has been involved in telekinesis. We know that there has actually been research by the U.S. military into telekinesis. You mentioned that earlier, remote viewing and so on. In fact, as a matter of fact, in this Afghanistan war, I've read several news stories where psychics have been involved even in the search for Osama bin Laden. I'll tell you something, Dr. Monteith. One has to wonder, with the mad rush by scientists to implant humans with microchips and to interface our brain matter with microchips, if something resembling telekinesis might not in fact become more of a scientific reality in the not-too-distant future. Specialists like Dr. Roy Backe of Emory University in Atlanta, Georgia, are already installing chip-to-brain implants that can create telekinetic-like powers. I read just this week where scientists are working on systems that may one day enable people to move prosthetic limbs with this new technology and just the power of thought. Professor Kevin Warrick, the first known recipient of a biometric chip implant, spoke excitedly of human microchip implantation and of the telekinetic-like power that it gave him to shut lights off and on and to command computers and to make decisions. And then I read probably the same news stories that many of your listeners read just a few days ago, where researchers at Brown University have now implanted monkeys with monkey brains with fingernail-sized brain implants, which have empowered them to be able to move cursors on computer screens and to make decisions on the computer just by them thinking about it. Well, I think when you combine that kind of technology with cloning and maybe even more specifically transgenics, and then the spiritual element, the quest where people want this, they want it so badly, they want to be able to control things merely by the power of thought, it becomes, I think, immediately obvious that the future of mankind could in fact include persons with telekinetic-like powers. And this technology, there are those who say that much of this technology is reverse engineering of alien exotic technologies already. Freeman Dyson of Princeton's Institute for Advanced Study has spoke openly of his fear that government and industry and biochemical science are going to promote an unrestricted exchange and sale of human gene technology, and he has said that the ultimate danger of biological technology comes from its power to change the nature of human beings by the application of genetic engineering to human embryos. In other words, there is a danger that has both a physical and spiritual quality to it, and nobody really knows what is going to happen in the future by introducing, for instance, through transgenic animal genes into humans. I wanted to ask you about that, because I know you were a medical doctor, or you are.
Well, I used to be a medical doctor. Now I go to the I go down to the medical meetings, and I just sit there and listen in awe. The things that they're doing now, I just can't believe. But go ahead.
Well, I guess my question is, I'm completely a layperson in this, but my research, and I want to know if this is true or not, has led me to conclude that, well, first of all, that molecular biologists classify individual genes by function. But nobody knows for sure if a gene's coding will function the same way from one species to another species. In other words, interspecies differences might affect the genes protein interactions and do everything from alter hereditary traits to whatever, and maybe even ultimately producing animal characteristics within humans. My point about that was going to be that we all know, for instance, that animals have increasingly shown to have what almost appear to be psychic powers. Not that they are, they may be purely instinct, but something that we don't have. For instance, before an earthquake, domestic and wild animals will change their behavior. Other animals have been shown to be capable of diagnosing malignant melanomas. They seem to have instincts of both fear and encroaching danger and all those kind of things that we don't have. If through transgenics we introduce animal genes into human DNA, then when you combine that with brain implants that can give us this telekinetic, but what are we looking at, Dr. Monteith? Let me emphasize the doctor quality there for a moment and ask you, what is your thoughts about all of that? Are we on the verge of changing what it might even be to define what a human is?
Absolutely, and I think that we are trying to play God. I think that God is not going to take very kindly to what's going on. They say that the knowledge is increasing now about every 11 months. In other words, everything that was known from the beginning of time to the present will be outmoded 11 months from now, and the amount of knowledge will be doubled by then. This is just going at such a phenomenal rate. And they're talking about, an ovum from a cow and planting it in a lion, doing cloning this way, and then you can mix the genetic qualities of these two entirely different animals. And it won't be a long a step from there to doing it with human beings. God is not going to put up with this. I mean, if God is a righteous God, one of these days he's going to intervene. And I see today, every time I think of that phrase, as it was in the days of Noah, or you have the exact quotation. But I think that we are on the edge of God's intervention in the affairs of mankind. And at one time, he destroyed everything with a massive flood. The next time, I fear, it may be by fire. We've got Mike calling in from Santa Cruz. Mike, did you have a question or comment?
A little of both, as usual. Great program tonight. I'm sorry, I have to say I missed the first hour.
Well, tell you what, you can always get the copy of it.
Yeah. As far as the genetic engineering, I think one could make a strong argument to say that the Antichrist will be a genetically engineered superhuman.
Well, we'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah, I mean, well, that could be one thing that they're aiming for with all this.
I just between you and me, I think he's already here someplace.
Really?
I think that there probably has always been an Antichrist, because the devil's never really known, the date and the time any more than you and I have. Only God knows when that is. But everything points to me that we're moving very rapidly towards the climax of history.
Yeah, well, there's always...
Let's take your caller's hypothesis there for a moment. I mean, we know that Jesus is the seed of God, basically. He was the seed of the woman. It didn't have an earthly father. But Satan, or the Antichrist, is referred to as the seed of Satan. Another place... Paul said of him that he is the son of perdition. The word son is the Greek huos, and perdition is apaleos, which means he is the son of Apollyon. He is the son of the demon destroyer. Now, if he is the son of Apollyon, then it brings to us, and we go right back to what we've been talking about all night about genetic engineering and are we the offspring of advanced extraterrestrials. Listen, the very idea to me of engineering human genes is so frightening. I think that it raises the specter of a man-made monster who indeed could become the Antichrist. Direct modification of genes, that ought to scare every listener, humanist, secularist, Christian, because it makes us wonder, what are ethicists going to be debating in the very near future? What are they debating right now I mean, already we can envision the question I asked a moment ago. What does it mean to even be a human? For instance, would a crossbred, or not even crossbred, would a transgenically created half-man, half-ape have civil rights? Does a person have to have two biological parents to be a human? Will we cloud the distinction between animals and humans? There's a huge push. Did you know that 20% of all government-funded research grants this year are going to transgenic research? This is a monstrous program, and I honestly think that we're talking about very soon future questions. We might even cloud the difference between male and female. You look at what's transpiring right now with those persons who seek sex reassignment surgery. The catchphrase has already gone from sex reassignment surgery to gender reassignment surgery. And that language is intentional because the goal is to change, their motive is to change state and federal definitions of male and female to existing physical characteristics rather than gender at the time of birth. But I think the conservative Christians not only need to be outraged and just get mad and holler about this, but we need to debate these issues from an ethical point of view, because this technology is, I think it's an affront to the divine order. It's the very kind of demonic science, if you will, that could give birth to an Antichrist. I know I kind of got inflamed there for a moment, but you know, the Bible tells us that God requires humans, animals, and plants to reproduce after their own kind. Biblically speaking, species integrity, including the ideal of male and female, is required by God. And one of the reasons why it might be is because of the Nephilim activity, which occurred in the Old Testament, which was a transgenic creation of angel and human species, which was outlawed by God. God commanded the angels to keep their own habitation. And the Bible says those angels which kept not their own habitation, he has reserved in chains into everlasting darkness. I mean, there is a science that is available, which we don't know very much about. And it has to do, I think, with what we're leading into in these modern days. It has something to do with something very similar to transgenics, and it is something that very much is outlawed by God. And let me tell you something. I was reading the other day in Leviticus 18:23, the law against bestiality, sex between humans and animals. And I read a critic who said, look at these silly Bible prophets. They actually thought that if a man laid down with an animal, that a half-human, half-animal would be born. And he was using this as a criticism of the Bible and saying this illustrates that the Bible was not inspired. But I looked at it in the Hebrew word confusion, where it says this is confusion, and the punishment for it was for that kind of activity was death. The Hebrew word for confusion is tibble, and it means a violation of nature or of God's divine order. And the idea is that the Levitical code surpasses the physical act of intercourse and actually spoke to the issue of confusing the species, of changing, intermingling one species with another species, where God has placed a line that says there must be an integrity between these two creations. So by that standard, transgenically altered humans, they're not even human at all.
Sure.
As a matter of fact, we don't even know what they are, and we can't know what they are, because introducing animal genes into human DNA creates an unclassified mutation outside of the divine order. So I would agree with your caller. There could very well be a kind of science that has been outlawed by God. It was even in the Levitical code. He destroyed all of the Nephilim, and it's very likely that the Antichrist might be a super Nephilim, if you want to think of him that way.
All right, anything else, Mike?
Down that vein, still haven't gotten to my question, but when one considers the Nazi-era effort to create the super race, the Aryan Nation, and then that effort was kept alive by us through Project Paperclip and probably some number of other things we've never heard of, that science has continued on through today. We keep hearing about it all the time, although most people don't connect it to the Aryan Nation effort. We know that, well, and this is to be an occult-based society, the master race. That was Hitler's dream. That's still going on. It didn't end with World War II.
Yeah. Now, most people don't understand that. They don't even know about Operation Paperclip, which was, of course, where we brought the Nazi scientists here, and we actually allowed them to continue their macabre experiments. Go ahead.
I wanted to ask your guest if he knows anything about ley lines, L-E-Y lines.
I don't. Not by that name, anyway.
Yeah.
Go ahead and explain them, Mike.
They're what you would call spirit pathways. They're described briefly in the Seth material, if you're familiar with that. Jane Roberts is a medium, and Seth is a spirit. I first read about that about 30 years ago. Ley lines are, well, spirit highways or pathways. They crisscross the universe. You can search the word or the phrase ley lines, that's L-E-Y, on the net, and you come up with all kinds of things. Some people are even mapping these lines around the globe, and there are many occult, well, they call it, I forget the word now, well, it's a geomancy, architectural sites, occultic architectural sites around the globe.
You're talking about like, maybe where the pyramids are. And
well, these are very often you find them on a line with each other on the globe. And there's even one called the E-line that goes all around the world. But there are many smaller ones. Through space, they go in straight lines. Across the Earth, they go straight, but with the curvature, so in that sense, they are curved. There's one other thing these lines do, is besides going straight, they'll turn sharply at a right angle. Now, I've found it interesting to note that in many descriptions of the trajectories of UFOs, these objects will appear to be going very straight, very fast, and then sometimes they turn at right angles, right there in the middle of everything in the sky.
Which defies physics.
Yeah, with no change of velocity. There's one book that's describing this, and this is the only Christian source I know. It's the title is The Invaders by Alan Street. Maybe your guest has read that one. The subtitle is A Biblical Study of UFOs, and they largely make a case for the demonic origin of UFOs.
Sure. Well, that was the point we made in the first hour, Mike.
Yeah,
everything points to the fact that they are demonic manifestations.
Yeah. I've been paying attention to the subject for a long time, and I am leaning more towards a concept of not so much aliens from other star systems or what have you, but there's a demonic coupling of the occult realm and our military-industrial complex.
You're probably absolutely right.
And quite likely these UFOs are man-made, in other words, they're of Earth origin, and our military-industrial complex has learned how to couple the physical with the supernatural.
Okay, well,
and they're even able to, of course, make their abductions.
Okay, well, right now we're sort of running out of time here, but anything else you want to say to wrap up, Mike?
Well, it could go on and on.
Okay, fine. We'll do this again some evening, okay?
Okay.
Bye-bye. And, of course, Mike says that he thinks that they're manufactured. I think that, what are your thoughts on that? Do you think some of them are manufactured and some of them are really totally demonic?
I was listening to him. As I was listening to him, vaguely I can remember reading a couple of articles on what he's talking about. And I just wished I could remember what I thought about it at the time that I read it, but unfortunately I can't. But, you know, I think he made some very valid points. I wished I could speak with more authority to this subject of ley lines. I'm going to have to go back now and read them again and refresh in my memory what it was I even read about it in the first place.
Well, Mike's been at this for 30 years, and he, for many, many years, was in the New Age. So when he speaks of these things, he's speaking really a first-class, a first-person encounters with this sort of thing.
Well, in any case, everything that he said, I think, agrees with what we've talked about already tonight and what is conveyed in this movie, Deceived, that there are contacts being made. And it's up to the civilian, I guess, to decide if some of these so-called alien contacts are coming from super intelligent creatures who have traveled here from great distances and advanced technology, or whether we're talking about spiritual presences who have their own agenda. And as a Christian, and as a researcher, and as an individual interested in Bible prophecy, it seems to me that the case is very strong to be made that at least in some cases what we're talking about here are spiritual powers who are prepping the earth, if you will, for probably some kind of near future manifestation of their presence that has to do with great deception and the construction of global conspiracy. And I was reading last week, as I was thinking about this Star Wars movie that's coming up, and what this guy had said about how the doctrine or the religion that's being taught in these Star Wars movies will affect more young people in this generation than preachers in the pulpit. And so I went on the internet and I was looking around for different news stories that might either argue that point or agree with that point. And I found a piece by Barrett Kajos, which you may have already read, called Star Wars Joins United Religions at the Presidio. And Barrett, of course, was talking about the old military base, the Presidio there in San Francisco, that's being used these days as a model for developing a community model for a sustainable society.
That's, of course, where Gorbachev is and George Lucas and many, many people involved in the occult are right there on the Presidio. Isn't it interesting? Our government would turn the Presidio over to them, but you and I couldn't get an office there?
That's exactly right. As a matter of fact, that's one of the points that Barrett made was that George Lucas had beat out all these other competitors and went and built Skywalker Ranch and Lucasfilm Studios. And like you say, Mikhail Gorbachev's Gorbachev Foundation office is there. And I'm sure that you have made the point many times that Gorbachev is very much a proponent of a new world order and a new global religion that espouses, at least in part, a New Age kind of universal belief system, much like Lucas is proposing in his Star Wars movies.
And all ties together once you understand what's really going on in the world. Well, Tom, I want to thank you so very much for being with us. We've been talking about the movie Deceived, and of course, if you'd like to know more, you can give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, or it should be available at your local stores, your video stores, your Christian bookstores in the very near future. Thank you so much for being with us, Tom. It's always a pleasure having you.
Well, thank you, Dr. Monteith, for inviting me on your program.
God bless you. And we'll be talking to you very, very soon. Good night.
Good night.
All right, fine. Well, I hope you enjoyed the program. And this is the time, of course, when we have to ask you to pray for America and pray for revival, pray for our ministers. We're living in very, very difficult and trying times. So please remember to pray for Radio Liberty, my ministry, for our provision and our protection. And we'll be back again with you tomorrow evening at the same time. Until then, may the Lord be with you.